Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
They say that size doesn't matter, but we all know that's a lie. Size always matters when you're talking about trucks or that steak that you ate last night. Don't fall for those cheap gimmicks or stupid commercials. You want to increase your size, do it the old-fashioned way. Get yourself some man tires. That's right, man tires. A good set of man tires can change any wussy wagon into a respectable man-mobile in minutes. Just visit mymantires.com and see what you've been missing. That's mymantires.com. Men, the time is now. Log on to mymantires.com and tell them you want some of them man tires. Man tires, the original male enhancement. Available now, only on mymantires.com.
Supporting bees, the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of the Texas Warbird Report here on WarbirdRadio.com. I'm your host, Zane Adams, your resident and native Texan, and, you know, here we are back on Warbird Radio live, coming to you on Tuesday nights. It's a lot of fun to do. If this is your first time listening to the Texas Warbird Report, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm Zane Adams, of course. I've been with Matt Jolly and Warbird Radio for quite a few years now. Used to do the Wix Warbird Weekly with Ryan Keough. Ryan's moved on to bigger and better things, or at least to bigger things, being the tour coordinator with the Collings Foundation. See him on the National Wings of Freedom Tour, maybe even flying the B-17. You never know where Ryan's going to be, but go out and see him. They got about a month to go on the tour, and he'd be happy to say hi to you there. But I used to crew with the B-17 Chucky back in the 80s and 90s. The Warbirds got into my blood that way, and I'm still here, still kicking around the edges the best I can with Warbirds. A little bit about our show, what we do around here. We talk Warbirds, of course. A mix of all things Texas. Texas is a big state. We've got a lot of big Warbirds. We've got the CAF and the Commemorative Air Force in based in the state, Kavanaugh Flight Museum, Lone Star Flight Museum, lots of small museums and some not so small, like the Texas Flying Legends. And, you know, there's just a lot of things going on in the state of Texas with Warbirds. We've got some current military going on, a lot of reserve bases, some active duty stuff in the state as well. So it's an exciting place to live and see if you're into Warbirds and like airplanes. We have a lot going on, a lot of history with aviation in Texas as well. So that's what we're here for, to talk Texas and talk Texas Warbirds. You know, we figure it's a whole nother country, so why not? Tonight is a little bit of a – we start – with air show season, basically, in Texas. Summertimes, it's a little too warm for air shows. Our concrete melts your shoes, and, you know, it's uncomfortable to fly airplanes, and it takes too much water to keep people wet and hydrated out there on the ramps in the summertime. So we have a spring season where we have a little air show season, and then we have a fall season with air shows. And October's generally real heavy with air shows and fly-ins in the state. It's for one of our best parts of the year. You know, the temperature breaks below 95 most places, and so it becomes a good place to hang outside with. Normally, you know, it gets to be a little tough, but October's are it, and big October air shows come around. We've got one here in Fort Worth this weekend, the Alliance Air Show here in Fort Worth. In the Fort Worth, Dallas area, it's a big air show. It's a big, you know, regional air show we have, and, you know, this year headlined by the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds. Thunderbirds arrived in town today in style, and so we're looking forward to seeing the birds. Kavanaugh Flight Museum always has a big presence for Warbirds at the Alliance show. Just saw the static list was just released today, it looks like we got a Spitfire coming. I don't know where it's from, but there's a Spitfire on the list. The Reno Racer, Miss America at Oklahoma, is coming down to grace our grace us with her presence there. It'll be good to see. It's always good to see a racing airplane around on the ramp. You know, there's a few other things going on. Matt Yonkin's going to be here flying his Beech 18. The T-33, Ace Maker T-33 show is going to be here. And Ross Perot Jr. is supposed to be flying his Thunderbird-painted T-38 Warbird, one of the few civilian T-38s flying around out there. And he pulls it out of the hangar occasionally. I don't know exactly who's flying it, if Perot Jr. is flying it or not, but it's really cool to see. And he puts on quite a show with that. So that and the other general air show, aerobatic acts. And it'll be a lot of fun this weekend. I'm really looking forward to it. We'll be there all weekend covering the show, and hopefully we'll have some good information, good stuff for you when we get back. So, but tonight and later this week, we are talking the Wings Over Houston air show. That's a big air show. It's a big Warbird air show, a commemorative Air Force show. And it will be, it comes up next weekend, the October 1st and, or November 1st and 2nd. And it is always a good show. This year, it's going to be bigger and better than normal. They're having a Vietnam demo, which we'll talk about here in a minute with our guest. The F-86 is here. I think Steve Hinton's going to bring an F-86. Randy Ball's going to be in the MiG-17. Texas Flying Legends is going to be flying. You know, their Zero, their B-25, Mustang, Corsair, P-40 most likely. You never know what the Lewis guys will show up in, whether it's a B-25 or a F-8 Bearcat, or who knows what. They usually bring something good to the show. CAF's going to put on the Big Taurus show and have their normal large World War II Airpower demo. They had bring in the Lone Star Flight Museum, Texas Flying Legends, all those guys put together. Certainly have some heavy iron on the ramp, and a little added special there with our tonight's guest as well. So it's going to promise to be a great show, headlined by the Blue Angels. Going to have the Blue Angels and a V-22 Osprey, built here in Texas, of course. But it should show a good demo as well. I'm looking forward to that. Never seen a V-22 demo. Seen plenty fly around here, but not the demo. So that should be fun. And tonight, our guest is he's been on Warbird Radio with us before, but Rick Harris. Rick, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
All right. I'm well. How are you?
We're busy.
Yeah. We're busy. I can imagine.
We've got our biggest participation in Wings Over Houston with everything we've got flying, unfortunately, with the exception of the Phantom. It just got word today that the engine ran out good today that we've been waiting on, and still got a couple of things left to do to it, and then run it again, and then we'll ship it home. And by the time we get all this back together, it'll be a couple of weeks at least after Wings Over Houston. So
yeah, I know there's a little disappointment out there that the F-4 is not going to make it in the show. It sure is it's a unique Warbird out there. And I mean, since the Air Force isn't showing them off anymore, you guys have got the only show in town with that bird. And I hope Al, your mechanic, and Bob, your crew chief, you hope you keep him away from sharp objects after, you know, not being able to make the show. I know it's not on their head, but, you know,
well,
we
flew the Skyhawk today on a revenue flight, and gentleman came in from France who is a flight test engineer over in Europe with the European and French their test group over there, and he had a great flight. So Al was busy with that today, and we're all disappointed that the Phantom's not going to make it, but we're going to make up with it with the T-33 in brand new paint. It's going to fly during the Korean segment. Don't know if an F-86 is going to make it after all. But my understanding is that Steve's probably going to bring something from Rod Lewis's stable. He wasn't sure what, but they flew a Horseman last week in San Francisco. My understanding was the airplanes are still on the West Coast, so that may or may not happen. I don't know. We'll see, and we're going to fly the Messerschmitt 262, and we're going to fly the F-100, and hopefully those items alone will make up for the disappointment I have in the Phantom, Andy. But
well, you're going to fly the ME-262 in the World War II demo with the CAF birds and all that stuff. That ought to be interesting to see.
It will. It'll be just like it was 60 years ago, except that the engine won't flame out when you move the throttles, and the pilot, who happens to be Tom Gregory in this segment, will be not having landed dead stick. So, which was a pretty common factor with the real ones. And you know what? The big thing is we'll be able to reuse the airplane because the Mustangs won't be able to strafe it into oblivion. So,
they won't catch you at takeoff or landing on that dude.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about the 262.
Well, we flew the Messerschmitt last year on the Wings of Freedom tour, and they flew it quite a bit in formation with the bombers and with the Mustang. And at one point, Frank was leading the pack, and Jim Harley was behind in the Mustang. And Jim finally had to call Frank and say, "Frank, you got to back it off a little. I can't hang with you." And he's like, Frank just pushed the throttles a little bit, and it just zoomed away from the Mustang. And you could see where the speed advantage was so huge, but we've also come to find out that it is not a fighter. It's a point defense interceptor. It really won't turn very well with a Mustang, and speed is definitely its advantage. So it
it's kind of like the F-104 of its day, huh? You point it at where you need to go and make your pass and go home, I guess, huh?
Right. Well, they could go back, climb up to altitude, and make another run through the bomber stream, but they really didn't want to mix it up with the Mustangs and or the P-47s. It's just not a fighter. It's really an interceptor. And as long as you keep that in the back of your head and, you know, play to its strengths, then you're going to win. And,
sure.
Especially with those 4 30-millimeter cannon. I mean, it's those shells and that thing and that bore on that cannon is a whole lot like the A-10 cannon. And it's just not something I want to hit my airplane, exploding as they are, you know. So
right.
It's quite a machine, and it's up and running. She's very reliable. The guys at Sanders did a wonderful job making that aircraft an aircraft we can all trust, and she's very, very honest. So in that respect, systems-wise, she's a great airplane. As one of the other pilots, she's got a lot of time in the airplane. Says it's not really a joy to fly; it's more of a privilege.
Sure.
But it was an airframe that was never. They never had the time to refine it. They got it operational. They made it work. The war was over,
right.
That was that. And so, taking all that into mind, it's a pretty deadgum honest revelation of that airplane. It really is. So
yeah, and your airplane was. Your airplane was started here in Fort Worth by Herb Tischler. And
it actually was the wing and the tail and the fuselage were mated together. It was up on its gear.
Sure.
And then whatever happened in between the Tischlers and Snyder or whatever that was, and the whole thing was just taken apart again and shipped back up to Washington, and they took the airplane apart and restarted everything else and turned it into an 18-year project. And airplane was plumbed and wired, and I mean, I don't know exactly what all happened, but between then and the time that the foundation acquired the aircraft, we went back in. The foundation spent a large amount of money and time with the Sanders out there, and they virtually touched almost every system on the aircraft and a lot of the sheet metal and landing gear, and we put new CJ610 engines in with fresh paper and fresh overhaul engines and hydraulic pumps that do the job like they're supposed to, and it's just a whole different airplane. And it's, like I say, it's a very, very honest airframe. So
I'm looking forward to seeing it fly. I didn't get to see it fly when it was on the tour up here. I missed it like three times, and I saw it sitting on the ramp, and got Jim Harley stuck me in it, and I was shoehorned in there, you know, as well as I do. This guys that are a little wider through the midsection and shoulders, it's not really made for us. But
you know how slim I am, and I was fortunate. Rick Sharp called me and said, "Hey, I'm going to go pick up the Messerschmitt and bring it back to Houston." why don't you go with me? I'd like to have you along. You can spell me on it. And more than that, you've got the credit card in your back pocket, and I'd love to have you along. Yeah. And so we took 9 legs to get it from Sacramento to Houston over a 3-day period. It only has a 200 nautical mile range. It does not carry enough fuel to have to file IFR. There's no legal IFR reserve on the airplane. So you have to stay below 18 and fly VFR, which we did. And the rear cockpit is fairly tight. By the first day after 5 legs, my biceps were black and blue from the bruises from the cockpit.
Yeah.
Combing.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yep. And, well, it's a triangular cross section for the fuselage.
It actually tapers. It does do that. You're right. It's a very triangular fuselage, and they say that the
Looks like maybe we've dropped out, Rick. There, we'll have to take a quick break here.
Yeah, Zane, we can try him right back.
Yeah. See if we can get back there.
We'll take a break and we'll try him right back for you, though.
Okay.
See,
we'll
you
be right
what you were doing. You're doing it. Yeah. All right. Stand by.
Live from Washington D.C. This is Warbird Radio.
They say that size doesn't matter. But we all know that's a lie. Size always matters when you're talking about trucks or that steak that you ate last night. Don't fall for those cheap gimmicks or stupid commercials. You want to increase your size, do it the old-fashioned way. Get yourself some man tires. That's right, man tires. A good set of man tires can change any wussy wagon into a respectable man-mobile in minutes. Just visit mymantires.com and see what you've been missing. That's mymantires.com. Men, the time is now. Log on to mymantires.com and tell them you want some of them man tires. Man tires, the original male enhancement. Available now, only on mymantires.com.
Supporting bees, the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Okay, we're back here on the Texas Warbird Report on warbirdradio.com with Rick Harris. Rick, are you back with us? Hello. Well, we seem to have lost him again. Hello, Rick. Well, I guess he's not there. we'll just have to go on from here for a moment.
Yeah, that's bizarre. It's showing that Rick is there.
Yeah.
How strange is that?
He must be in a...
Let's see if this works. We'll just keep pushing buttons until something happens. Ah, there we go. There we go. Now we'll get his voicemail. You can leave him a long voicemail message. No, there he is.
Hello.
At which point did I lose you?
Well, we were talking about the ME-262 and about being bruised and triangular cockpit. So.
Yeah, it's just what I was going to say is towards the back of it tapers and it gets very tight on the shoulders. So, other than that, it's going to be a safe flight.
Yeah, it will be. It will be. I look forward to seeing it racing Mustangs out there, and that should be fun. Speaking of racing Mustangs, you guys ought to take it to Reno, but that's another story, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe the A4 would do better out there.
Yeah, maybe.
We don't need two motors.
Right. That's right. But, that's right.
Yeah, I'm not sure it would turn. I'm not sure it would make the turns, really. But
maybe not.
It's going to need more acres, I think. But anyway, we're looking forward to Wings Over Houston.
And so your Vietnam demo. Let's talk about the Vietnam demo. You guys are going to have max effort with the Collings South or Collings West. What do you call yourselves? You're the Collings guys.
We're Collings Foundation Houston.
Okay. All right. And for those of you guys who don't know, Collings Foundation is based out of Stowe, Massachusetts. And The B-24, the B-17, the P-51 travel the country with the Wings of Freedom tour year round, or almost year round. From
nine
what?
Months.
No, yeah, there you go. And from February, March, and through November, and so we get out and see those guys. Look on their website, the Collings Foundation's website there, and find the Wings of Freedom tour. The Houston guys
coming to a city near you eventually.
Yeah, there you go. And you guys in Houston,
we do mix up the tour.
You guys keep the kerosene burners for those guys, and
we have
several airplanes there. And tell us, I mean, I'm looking forward to one of these airplanes in particular, the F-100. I've not seen an F-100 personally fly, and I'm really excited to hear the bang from the afterburner and see that dude fly. So tell us a little bit about your F-100.
Well, the F-100 we have is an F model, two-place F model. They were the last F-100s built. This aircraft spent its time, Vietnam time frame, in Europe. And went to North Africa, Turkey, made some deployments in that direction. Spent a lot of time in England. And then when it came home, it went to the 149th in San Antonio. And then they took it to the boneyard. It sat out there, and the Danish Air Force bought a bunch of them. From what I can tell, almost all F models, flew them for a long time, and then a bunch of them were sold to Flight Systems. And Flight Systems turned them into target tugs in Germany. They're now doing that mission with A-4s. And so it stayed there for a while, and when they closed that program down, they brought them back to Mojave. And all of a sudden, one day, they had a tendered offer out there of F-100s and all the support stuff, and a couple of gentlemen put a bid in and got them. And this aircraft was sold. I don't know if Dean Cutshaw's airplane in Indiana was one of them or not. I know his was a Turkish-operated aircraft. And we were excited about this one when it came on the market. It was a beautiful airplane in Thunderbird markings, based in El Paso. But prior to that, it was in New Mexico Air Guard markings, mostly polished with just the markings.
Right, National Motor Finish there, yeah.
Right, and then when we got it, a couple of years ago, we immediately took it to the paint shop and put it in the colors of Misty Fast Facts, and it's marked in Bud Day's colors, and the aircraft he was assigned, all historically accurate as far as the paint job is concerned. And Bud, unfortunately, the Air Force told him, they said, we want you to start this program. We want you to use F-100s. He says, I don't want to do that. They said, we want you to start this program and use F-100s. He says, I don't think that's a good idea. And they said, we want you to do this program and fly F-100. He said, yes, sir, I get the message.
Bud
was actually in the back seat of another aircraft, and they were hit. He was giving a guy a check ride, and they were hit. Bud got out, and the rest is history as far as Bud Day is concerned. And we thought that this aircraft, being the only second surviving F-100 to fly in the world, needed to be in Vietnam colors. And so that's when we took it out of Thunderbird colors. As it was put to me by my good friend Fred Lewis, who is now deceased, the Thunderbirds have somebody that honors them every day.
Right.
And so the beautiful polished Thunderbird F-100 disappeared. And she looks great in camo. We tried to do it as accurately as we could. That's our deal. One of my pet peeves is if you go to a museum and read something or see something and know that it's not right, and the people that do it aren't really that worried about the research, and it's just as easy to get it right as it is to get it wrong.
Correct.
Maybe that's my version of my nose in the air, but I've seen it at a bunch of museums across the country at different times, not just with aircraft, and I have other interests it's a little disappointing at times to have that much effort put into something and not get the information right to put out to the public. So yep. We do our best across the foundation, not just down here in Houston.
Sure.
So we've got that going.
I think the, I mean, like you said, most F-100s that people know of and have seen pictures of are natural metal finish. Yeah, the Thunderbirds flew them for a short time, but, you know, they were a bunch of guard airplanes and, you know, some other roles that they had. But this was a real combat role for the F-100. And the Fast Fac, tell us a little bit about the forward air controller operation with this, sir.
Well, the Army, or the Army, the Air Force, the Marines were flying Cessna 01 bird dogs.
Right.
They were going places where the ground fire was just too heavy. And so the Air Force stepped in and picked up the O2s because they were still working on the OB-10 Bronco. So the Marine Corps and the Air Force both bought the Bronco, but it was a while before it came out. But there were places that they were going that even they couldn't survive. And the Bronco goes pretty good. And so they decided, the Marines did, to start up a fast FAC unit. And what they did was, headquarters and maintenance squadron 11, they created a mini squadron with four or five aircraft, and they started with F-9Fs and Cougars. They had Panthers. Well, they had Cougars, actually. And so they were over there with TF-9s flying in combat, and they got some A-4s, TA-4Fs, and developed the fast forward air control deal, and they would go out at 400 knots and learn that they could actually spot the changes on the ground from day to day. They would learn the area and things that would look out of place. They'd realize what was going on. So they started hitting the Ho Chi Minh Trail. They started supporting the Marines, and they could come in and put their white phosphorus rockets on a target, and then they could call in the heavies, and this was all going on, just like in the 01 bird dogs, but at 400 knots. So sometimes in some of the videos of Kaysan, you can see Skyhawks come rolling in, and the Playboys were marking those targets before they were, and they were putting bombs around the end of the runway. Right. Some of those deals, they would take off, and as soon as they were wheels up, they're dropping bombs. And so they started it, and then the Air Force decided they needed to get in on the act, decided to do the F-100, asked Bud to start the program. It turned out to be a very successful program. And they actually, it was called Combat Saber, if I remember right, and they had priority. They could go to any F-100 unit in the theater and pull a two-place aircraft, no questions asked. And that's what they did, and they formed up this unit, and they were very successful. So later on, the mission was taken over by the Phantom, and those guys did a very good job with the Phantom in their same role. So most people don't realize that the F-100s flew the majority of ground support missions in Vietnam, and they lost a lot of them. They didn't lose as many as they did Thuds. They lost half the Thuds over there, but they the F-105, but they did lose right. a tremendous amount of aircraft. And those guys need to be remembered and honored, and that's what we're trying to do. And the good news is that we've been down waiting on new cartridges for the seats, waiting on new cartridges for the canopy remover. Those are all in, installed. We needed to do a fresh weight and balance since the paint job. That was completed yesterday. We drained the aircraft and did some other checks and loaded 1,000 gallons of gas on yesterday, and she's ready to fly. So
good deal. That's exciting.
Yes, it is. And we're glad to get her back in the air. So we have the A-4, we have the F-100, we have the T-33 and the new Korean paint. It's been painted and marked up to look like a T-33 that flew with the 111th Fighter Bomb Squadron from Houston in Korea, and their primary aircraft over there was straight-wing F-84s. And most people don't realize that the jet units all had T-33s, and what they would do is take their...
Everybody needs a squadron hack or a flight time or right. instructors would, or something, yeah.
Right, and they would take their T-33s and put them in the markings of the primary aircraft.
Yeah.
So our aircraft is painted like a straight-wing F-84.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine that was a Air Force veteran. He was in Okinawa, on Okinawa during the Korean War, but in a P-80 squadron. And, yep. Of course, P-80 and the T-33 are, you know, almost one of the – pretty much one of the same. But they did have for every five or eight F-80 or P-80s they had, or F-80s, they had a T-33. And, lots of things to be done when you got to have another guy with you as well. So this Ellington
– was
the Ellington group, did they deployed to Korea? Is that correct?
Absolutely. They have been active. They have been active and deployed since 1917. The Ace in the Hole, which is the their squadron marking, is the way it works is it's got a blue field. It's got the three-dimensional star, and in the middle of the star is the Ace of Hearts coming out of a rip in the middle of the star, because you've always got to have an ace in the hole. And that's why they're known as the Ace in the Hole Squadron. That was approved in 1917. And the patch, of course, has each color and each design portion means something. But, yes, they've been around since 1917. And they were an observation squadron in the 20s and 30s and flew things with V-12 Curtis Conqueror engines and high wings, and I can't remember what they were. There were some obscure observation aircraft when that was still a profession before they realized they were sitting ducks in a real battlefield. And
right.
So in World War II, they flew A models in North Africa and then later got the B's and C's that they flew for a while till they transitioned to D's. They came home and went back to Hobby Airport. They were not at Ellington. Ellington was an Air Force base, and these guys were National Guard. So they went to Hobby and operated out of Hobby, did not get jets at Hobby because their runways weren't long enough. And then they transitioned to the F-84s when they moved to Korea and fought over there. When they came back, they gave them 51 H's, and then they built them a new hangar over here at Ellington, and that's when they moved to the F-86, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
And, of course,
So they went straight from P-51s to F-84s in combat, huh?
Well, not in combat. They did a workup over in South Carolina first, but yes.
Oh, okay. All right. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, but then when they came back, they gave them the 51Hs because, again, Hobby wasn't long enough to run, or Houston International back then wasn't long enough to operate jets.
Yeah.
Especially F-84 straight wings.
Right.
Because you know about Republic and the long runways.
Yeah.
So, they had F-51Hs there, and then they moved to F-86s when they did finally move to Ellington and stayed with them and the D's and all that sort of thing, and actually ran the National Guard Instrument School for the whole National Guard for the whole country with about 30-something T-33s on the ramp as well as their alert aircraft, and they sat alert on the Gulf Coast, and until they were bracked and they were given predators. So
yeah, that's right.
In the last few years. Yeah, that was a sad day.
We were
invited to their 90th anniversary, and we couldn't decide if it was a party or a wake. It was a sad deal.
What we're gonna
do at the show is to get back to that is we're going to fly, since the F-4 is still down, we're going to fly the A-4 with a MiG-21, at least that's the plan, with a MiG-21 to show the folks what the war in the north over Hanoi looked like. And then about 30 minutes later, we will launch the A-4, the F-100, and our Huey. There's another Huey and a Cobra that'll be launched. We've got ground troops. We've got the bad guys out there in black pajamas. We've got a convoy of trucks and APCs that'll be moving troops. And it's going to be exciting with a lot of explosions and napalm and that sort of thing. And
so Rick Sharp is going to get in the business. It's his MiG-21, is that correct? And the Cobra.
Right. And it's his Cobra, and his Sky Raider's going to be up. He'll be in the 100. That's the plan. He'll be flying the 100. And then we'll have the O2 up first. Don't know if the A-26 is going to be included or not. It may be. I don't know if it's going to bring it. But the jets will be up. The ground war is going to be going on. We've already showcased Hanoi. And then when that's over, the Blues start. So we are the big set piece of the show other than the Blues.
That's
so
great.
It's going to be something that hadn't been done before on this scale. There's going to be radio call signs that approximate Vietnam between the Army guys, Hillsborough, the Air Force Control, the Hilo guys. It's all going to be on a CD that will be broadcast to the crowd, much like you hear the Hawaiian music or the island music and the radio Tora stuff from Tora. Yeah, it'll be the same kind of deal.
There you go. So you're gonna we're not gonna have to wait until dark to see that Black O2 Karens fly out there, are we? Is it?
We do what now?
I said we're not going to have to wait till dark to see that Black O2 that Karen flies around, are we?
No, I think she's actually going to be up first, and then before we put all that fast stuff up, she'll be probably landing. So.
There you go. Yeah, you wouldn't want to scare her with that banging afterburner and stuff. So.
It's already been done. It would not be a new sensation for her.
Yeah.
So.
Are you guys going to do Heritage Flight with the Air Force? Is that y'all, or is that something else?
No, that's not us.
We
have not sent an aircraft out to Heritage Practice. That'll probably be Skip, and who knows? Maybe Gumby. I don't know. He's flying the 262. At least that's the plan, and so he'll be doing that. But I understand he's supposed to fly a Mustang as well, and I don't know if that's part of the Heritage deal or not, but. We are supposed to fly a three ship during World War II with the 51s, and I understand Lone Star's 47 is broken, and so it will be coming up. But probably a 51s at least, and then the Messerschmitt in the middle, and so we'll see some formation passes with the World War II group.
Yeah, the unusual formation too. That ought to be good.
And this will be the first air show for the 100 and the first air show for the 262. Yeah. So it's going to be something to see.
Well, you guys have certainly helped put it on the map, I think. Everybody I've talked to is excited. I imagine you're going to have big crowds and an exciting air show for sure. So,
well, if we have Chamber of Commerce weather like we have had this week and this weekend and what we're supposed to have, if it continues there's no reason for for people not to come out and see what's going on, because it's going to be a big deal.
Now, Rick, you know the first rule of air show weather.
No, I've never done this before, Zane. I've been on the Ellington ramp when the rain was coming down so hard that the water couldn't run off fast enough, and it was up to I had my flat boots on, and the water was up to my bootlaces. So, yeah, I've seen what it can be, and those are the days when I would pick up the phone and call Bob Collins and say, can you get us a Catalina?
Yeah. It's a good idea.
yes and no.
Yeah, well, it'd be a great fishing boat.
Yeah, really. So anyway, that's what we're doing in 2 weeks. I know we're going to fly the 262 and the 233 on Friday just to get things going. I think Steve and Rick are going to fly the 262 and go off and do a little bit of stuff. Steve Kenton would like to get a shot at the 262 since he's flown both the Flugwerk and the real Focke-Wulf 190s and the real Daimler-Benz powered 109s. So yeah. He's expressed an interest, and we've worked out a way to make that happen on Friday. So it's not really part of the show, but we will have to be getting some stuff up. And
sure.
We're going to be down in the hot pits on the north end of the hot ramp in the Warbird area, and we'll be segregated obviously because of the jet blast. And I think we've got it worked out to where it's going to work pretty smoothly. So,
are the people going to be able to get close to your Warbirds during the? I know Wings of Houston, Wings Over Houston. A lot of people don't know, but the CAF, most of the Warbirds are open for the first hour or two of the show for people to walk around, kind of static display, and to get up close to the airplanes, and then they sanitize that area. So,
yeah, I think that the show opens at 8:00, and if I remember right, looking at the schedule, I don't have it in front of me, but I think that the ramp is open to crowds until 10:30, and then they start flying some stuff, and then they sanitize the ramp after that. So, like I say, we're on the far end, and we're sure going to watch for fog and all that sort of thing. We've already been there, done that once before, and we don't want to do it again. Yeah. So, they'll give us time, and we've got our crews, and we'll have our PX outside the ramp or outside the fences, and so you can get your Phantom and A4 and Huey shirts and that sort of thing. So we'll have a base of operations, and we'll we'll take care of them when Airbus calls. We should be ready to roll.
There you go. Well, I look forward to it. I really appreciate you offering to drag me around and put me to work when I can out there. I don't know what good I'll do, but I'll certainly be there with my camera and being able to help anything. I'll be down there Friday and ready to go. So I'm looking forward to it, and I do appreciate the offer for the getting me on there. I'm really looking forward to the show. It's exciting. But Foundation.
It's gonna be fun.
What do you guys have? What do you guys got anything exciting in the wings that you can talk about here? I know there was over the years there's been the wrangling with our great uncle in the East over F-105 and some other things, and I know there's probably not many news there, but I got to ask.
Well, to be honest with you, the 105 project is pretty much cold right now.
Yeah.
The Air Force put together a paper that they asked for, that they asked Congress to ask for. And so Congress asked them for it. And this had to do with transferring Class 1 aircraft of the types of aircraft we've been talking about.
Right.
And they came out with this paper, and they were the researcher, they were the victim, they were they did the paper. If you control all that, you can pretty much ask the question and get the data that gives you the results you want.
Yeah, judge, jury, and executioner. Yeah,
exactly. Very much so. And so they turned it over to Congress and basically said that an NFE, a non-federal entity, doesn't have the expertise to maintain the aircraft to the Air Force's fine high standards, and gave it to Congress. Well, Congress, those guys have their own expertise, but not in what we do, and so they have to trust the big dog on the block, which is the Air Force, that they're being told the straight story. Now, there's a few folks out there that do know, that are friends of the Warbird movement, and you know who some of those folks are.
Sure.
And they agreed that it was a stacked deck. And so the problem with that is that right now, with the House Armed Services Committee staffers, the guys who are out there, whoever gets elected, these guys are there no matter. They are very hostile right now about transferring this type of aircraft to any kind of entity. And so we have decided to just kind of back off and let things cool down, and hopefully by the time it's time to go back in and try again, the viable candidates won't be too far gone.
Yeah.
And it could be. I mean, there was a window that was opportune to make this happen, and
sure,
it may be closed, but we won't know until we look at them and try.
Yeah. Well,
so,
at the risk of going over the top, there seems to be a lot of anti-military flying sentiment in the ivory tower at this moment in time. Anyway, as evidenced by air show participation with the armed services.
When we did the A-4, right after we did the F-4, when you ask a bureaucrat a question or put it in writing, they are obligated to give you an answer. And the question
right.
I had that I did put in writing to the attorney that I was working with and some folks I was working with on the A-4 transfer was, since when does DOD policy supersede public law? And this transfer had already been signed into law. It was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I never could get an answer.
Yeah.
The arrogance was unbelievable, and it hasn't changed. You still see it with the ATF. You still see it with, all the different federal entities that are out there that we were all talking about, abuse of power. It extends all the way through the whole government. It's just amazing, and it's very frustrating. And now you got me in a soapbox again. But
if we can get you fired up a little bit, that's okay. But I understand what you're saying, and I think all our listeners out there understand what we're saying as well. And too many people see these, and I'm just people that don't know and people that don't care see this kind of stuff as just big toys, and they don't understand how it affects the veterans, the veterans' families, the people that served, and that's a whole lot of people out there. And I mean, I I always go back to the story where, you know, I was crewing on a Huey back in the 80s or 90s with a group here in Fort Worth, and we flew to an air show, and, you know, a fella, a Vietnam veteran, who, you know, the forgotten, they called the Korean guys the forgotten, you know, war, but these Vietnam veterans, you know, we all know what they went through and, you know, how they were treated for the most part. And, you know, he sat down on the deck of that Huey and broke down in tears and said, "I haven't been this close to a Huey since one saved my life and dragged me out of the jungle, you know, and to see a grown man just break down in the presence of a machine like that. That's what we do with warbirds of all types and the families. You know, I know the World War II generation is going away and starting to, you know, they're thinning out and there's not as many of them left, but the families are terribly interested in this still. You know, my own uncle was a B-24 pilot. His daughter and his grandkids are, this is bubbling up and they're becoming interested. You know, they came out to see the Collings Foundation, you know, or the CAF B-24, you know, this kind of stuff. They come to see this stuff because granddad flew this. They want a connection right. with the past and with history, and that's what we're about. And it's hard to get people to fly.
We used to fly the Huey on the Memorial Day weekend up at Palestine. It's a state railroad up there. And we had a young man, Shaw's a young man. He was probably in his mid-30s. So I want to fly on the Huey. I said, "No problem." I said, "Where would you like to sit in the aircraft, front seat?" He says, no, I want to sit in the back. He said, on the back bench, he said, "That's where my father flew. He was a Huey medic in Vietnam, and I never met him." And he said, "This is a way for me to connect with my dad." And so, you know, I got to tell you what, I'm kind of an emotional guy under this respect, and I get tears in my eyes just telling the story. And it happens all the time. You can't imagine how much closure we unintentionally give to these folks just by having that little Huey out there. And sure. We took it to the College Station, Brazos Valley Memorial Walk, and they just put the new Vietnam portion in, and it's a large wall. It has a 3D full-scale relief Huey coming off the wall. And part of that relief, along with the pilots in the windscreens, is it has one guy still in the cabin, another guy that's more partially out of the cabin in 3D, and the last guy is hanging on with his left hand. He has a foot on the skid. The other skid is out in the open, and so is his M16, and the muscle of his M16 is probably 4 feet away from the rest of the sculpture. It's that 3D, and it is an amazing memorial. It's not in Washington. The only right. thing I've seen close is the Korean guys on patrol in Washington, and they have, each war is represented by their own sculpture, and so there's two guys from Korea on patrol. They're full up. One guy's got M1, one guy's got Iran. You know, it's just really impressive. And we flew in for that, and they were speaking, and we came roaring over the top and bent it around and came out and landed on the soccer field right across the street from where this was going on. And the people here heard us coming but didn't know we were coming. The guy speaking did. And so they all stopped. And they said their heads started raising up and looking around, and they could hear the whopping coming. And they said, "We made a grand entrance." It was really cool. And that's how we go out and touch people with the Huey. And, you know, that we can do things with it that we can't do with the other aircraft. So
sure.
it really has become a labor of love over the years. You have to look at it that way.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. Well, and I know the Huey. And the Huey earns its keep. I know when you guys were in Dallas with the tour, I mean, that Saturday, the thing flew all day long. I mean, you put gas in it, you let the pilot go to the bathroom, and off it goes again. And I was amazed, always amazed at how well it turns out and how many people want to see it and touch it and ride in it. And I think it's a good thing for the foundation for sure.
Yeah, it is. And we hope to keep her in the air a lot a lot longer, and it's special, and because of the history of the aircraft. I mean, four Marine squadrons as a gunship in Vietnam, flown in combat by the Marines' only pilot Medal of Honor recipient,
yeah,
with the after action reports to prove it. I mean, that's a special little aircraft, and the metal aircraft is still existing. That Les was flying that day, and it's Whiskey Bravo 15, and it hangs in the museum at Quantico, but ours flies. So people get a real sense of what the U is about, whether they're just going, cool. So
right. Yeah, well, when you get the Huey to vibrate in your head, and I love the Huey flight. It's been one of my favorite things. I mean, that's first helicopter I ever flew in. Well, not the first helicopter, but the first military helicopter I ever flew in when I was in high school, and the ROTC group went out and we flew with the Army Guard, you know, here local, and in a Huey. And you're right, they're special machines, and they're cool to hear, cool to see. And I look forward to seeing it as well. I mean, you guys have put on a great show. I've seen photographs of your Huey and Rick's Huey back a few years ago at Wings Over Houston, whooping and a whopping around, and it's, you guys put on a good show with it. You guys got some hot sticks to go with the airplane too. So
yeah, and Rick has traded his out, and he now has a K model, and the K model is identical to the Echo, and it is not a UH-1. K. It is an HH-1K because it was bought by the Navy, only 26 of them, as a search and rescue aircraft. And this particular one, the only thing we could find that it might have searched and rescued for were SEAL teams and sniper teams. And it was part of the HAL 4, the Seahawks were HAL 3 in Vietnam, and then they were disbanded. And then the Navy decided that they needed that one more time. You know, they needed that capability, much like the sniper school that the Marines disbanded and then started back up. So this aircraft was part of HAL 4, a direct descendant of HAL 3. It even had the Wolf and the Trident on the nose when it was acquired. And so it's identical, the same 540 rudder system, the same L-13 motor, has the same performance. It's quite a neat little aircraft, and they only bought 26 of them. And I don't know how many have survived, but this is one still flying, so it's kind of neat.
It is.
We got some rare aircraft coming. People need to come to the show to see what's going on. It should be
November 1st and 2nd.
Yes,
in Houston, Ellington Field. Be there or be square, right? I mean, it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a barn burner.
I think tickets are available online. I believe on their website. And they're pre-buy for $20, or they're $30 at the gate.
Yep. Yeah, it's wingsoverhouston.com is the website there. See it. Right. There's a little link, buy tickets there. So you can buy them online and be good to go. Show up early and stay late to see at the air show. And speaking of photos, I want to thank Chris Edmond for our little header photo of the F-100 today. That we put up. I appreciate him letting me use one because I didn't have one of my own, the thing flying. So it's a hot photo, and I appreciate Chris letting us use it there. Rick, I appreciate you being on with us, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
All right.
We'll have to spill some adult beverages somewhere during the weekend.
We'll do that. We'll figure it out. All right. You guys take care, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks, Rick. That's Rick Harris with the Collings Foundation Houston branch, the jet guys, the kerosene burners. Really look forward to seeing that air show. If you guys are in the South Texas, anywhere around, come on, Louisiana, South Texas, even Arkansas folks, we'll let you guys come. Come on down to Houston next week or weekend after next and see this great air show. Promises to be a real good one. So that's all we've got for tonight. We'll see you next month here on the Texas Warbird Report.
Before you go, I want to welcome Trey Carroll now to Texas because he is down there now.
He is. This is correct.
We're planning to do a Texas indoctrination party with Trey at some point in the future, so we'll be sure and tell all the listeners. But
we'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get him and
hide your women and hide your cows.
And maybe we'll get him and Mark Todd and that Taylor Stevenson yeah. kid. We'll put some of these young Warbird guys out there. We'll put them together. Right. And they are a party on wheels, I tell you. I don't know how much you hung around with those guys.
They're a good time. Yeah, they're a good time. Yeah. All right, that's all I had for you. So welcome to the welcome to God's country, Trey.
There you go. Well, that's all we've got tonight, guys. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next month.